Well, glad you guys are here. I am Hoops. I'm on staff with The Rock in Columbia, Missouri. Been on staff since 2006, so been around a few years. This is kind of a workshop that's just kind of grown out of just some of my personal desires to want to help reach campus. We'll get to what this kind of all encompassed in a little bit. How's it going, man?
Well,
right. What makes you uncommon on that?
And
we'll get to it later. All right. So my thought is, as you all know, because you're college students or have been college students, is reaching campus isn't as easy as it looks, right? Getting the message of Christ or the gospel to campus is sometimes very difficult. You know, I'm not a visionary, okay? I'm not a real strong evangelist, so it's kind of funny for me not having maybe the evangelist gift to be teaching a workshop on evangelism. But I live with one. I live with an evangelist. His name is John Drake. You guys saw him earlier today talking about LT. And here's a guy who is always thinking and dreaming about ways to get the gospel to students. He's always thinking of, oh, maybe if we got this survey or this Bible study or this event or this guest speaker, you know, will help us reach campus. You know, luckily, no longer does he want to use these. I don't know if you've ever seen. You can pass this around. These are that. Surprisingly enough, if you know John, that is John right here on the right. And these were, you know, back in the 80s probably, these were hip, you know, these little testimonials. Luckily, he's given up asking to use those. But last year, his crazy idea was, on Good Friday, he wanted to build 200 4-foot crosses, like huge crosses out of wood, that college students would carry all Good Friday, and it would just like it would just kind of be this like thing, you know, all these college students carrying these crosses around campus, and people really weren't too hip to the idea. So, you know, can you imagine walking into class and sitting down and like a huge lecture and having this like cross right next to you in the aisle? A little different. But you name it, he's thought of it. His imagination is always going. And yet, as often as he gets an idea, I also hear from him this thought, man, it is hard. Why is it so hard to reach students? You know, I've been on campus at Mizzou for 10 years. I was a freshman in 2001. And I know it's a challenge to get the gospel to students. I like to think and imagine that it was easier when I was a student and I spent 4 years living on the dorms. I stayed in the dorms for the sole purpose of just having a chance to reach people. And I think, oh, surely it was easier when I was a student. And as I think back and reflect back, no, it wasn't. I mean, I remember, so we were strategic. There's four guys, and we said, hey, we're going to pick a specific dorm, a specific floor, and we're just going to minister there. And this one year, our dorm was like open for everybody. We never locked our door. This is back before everyone had like fancy cell phones and laptop computers. We had this leather couch, you know. So we'd come back and, you know, from class, and people's shoes would be left there, all their stuff, you know, like just people kind of came and went. And so there's this one guy, his name was Augie. And, you know, we prayed a lot in our room, and he was one of the guys we just had on our heart. And this guy he had a reputation. He would blast like that screamo music, like that just kind of scares you a little bit, at the top, as loud as you could, and you'd hear it all across the floor. And then he was known for going to parties, okay? And here's what his reputation was. He would go to a party, and he'd find the biggest guy he could at the party. And he'd say, all right, you're going to punch me. And he would stand there. He was like in like the service, I think. And he would stand there in the party, and they would punch him square in the chest, and he wouldn't budge. So one night, I'm in my room on a Friday night just by myself, and Augie and another person come back, and they're wasted. And they come to my room. And here's this guy that we've been praying about. And I was thinking, maybe here's an opportunity. But the dude is, he's like pissed. And he's pissed at God, and he's like talking, he wants God to come down and fight him. And if God would come here right there, he'd beat the crap out of him. And it was intimidating, and I was getting a little intimidated. And but it wasn't easy. Reaching people isn't easy. the thing is, after Jesus gave the Great Commission, he left us without a roadmap for how to reach people. We don't have detailed instructions, and sometimes this can make it hard. You know, evangelism isn't as easy as three steps, or the Romans Road, or, you know, what worked 40 years ago with the four spiritual laws isn't going to engage today's student, right? So while our message doesn't change, the challenge we face is how to be adept in taking it to an ever-involving campus and ever-evolving students. You know, I don't live in the dorms anymore, and the map that I followed as a student, living there amongst the students in the dorms, doing life together, doesn't really work for me now as a 29-year-old. So there's no magic formula. It's not always as simple as a postcard or a survey or a formula. And so as I've been thinking about evangelism reaching people, I found myself asking, well, what is it that makes it so difficult? And so part of what I want to do as we have a group that's a little smaller is just even get you guys to give me some feedback. So what do you think are the barriers that make it hard to reach campus?
Someone's history.
What about their history?
Hypothetically, I grew up in an abusive home where my parents went to church and said they loved God, but then my father would come home and abuse me. That might prohibit me from wanting to listen to this guy here talk about Jesus.
Right. So if your family said, hey, we're Christians, but the way they lived, yeah, totally. Yeah.
Preconceived notions about Christians and just like people thinking because they met a Christian or a person who's been a Christian who acted like a really bad way or something. Just turns people off.
Yep. Assumptions. Previous experience with Christians. Mm-hmm. Someone over here. Yeah.
People not wanting to be confined to the rules and having to like live by a certain way and not be able to go out and do whatever they want.
Christianity can feel kind of stuffy for people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
There's like a fear in talking to people about like what you believe when people normally just don't talk about that.
Yeah, it's not an easy subject to engage. It's kind of one of those like talking to people about money or sex. Yeah,
yeah.
It can be a hard thing. Mm-hmm.
The fear of talking to someone who's been through tremendous things and you've really been through nothing experientially. To what they have.
Sure. So how can you relate to somebody if your life stories are a little different?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So being college students just want to ignore and walk away from everybody's sales pitch, so to speak.
Yeah. If you talk to someone about Jesus, it can feel like just like to the guy who's selling, you know, whatever. I think as I've thought about it, I think a lot of what I boil it down to is I think that there's a lot of clutter on campus to clear through as we hope or try to reach students. I think our campuses are cluttered with messages. Let me give you an example by taking you away from the campus. Okay, so I've helped lead multiple missions trips to Choluteca, Honduras, which is that video of that family that we saw last night. And you know, down there, it's what you do is you get a group of people and you go out in pairs and you go to some neighborhood and you go pretty much house to house and you just talk to people. And it's kind of fun because, you know, if you did that here in America, like if we went down the street here and we all just kind of split up, like combined, there might be three houses, you know, we stop at. But down there, you know, you stop at wherever you know, you talk to everybody and they want to listen. They want to engage with you in a conversation about God. But the thing is, I went to this one house, and it's this poor family, and their one son, he had been malnourished as a child growing up, and when you're malnourished, like, they can't, like, speak, or they can't function as a real developed adult, because they've been impaired. And so he was kind of a little slow, and we were just kind of engaging her in conversation about their family, and then about God, and, you know, so we started talking to her about, you know, hey, about how God's free gift, you know, of salvation. And how you don't have to earn it by works. And she couldn't get it because just like a week before we had been there, there had been another group from this other church that wasn't really a church in town that had said, you know, that they had to go to their church and do these things. And there was clutter. There was clutter, even in Honduras, at a place that is more receptive to the gospel because, you know, they don't have their riches to get in the way. There's still clutter to get the gospel to people. And I see it on campus. It is no different. The lives of college students are cluttered. But I think it's a little bit of a different kind of clutter. For one example, the New York Times reported how advertising clutters almost every aspect of our life. One marketing firm estimates that a living person in a city 30 years ago saw 2,000 ad messages a day, where that is compared to upwards of 35,000 today in one day, ad messages. You know, so advertisers try to fill every ounce of our lives. You know, like if we look around our room, even what the clothes we wear, right, are kind of walking advertisements. So really, is the message of Jesus gets lost as just another one of those cluttered ad messages. You know, so if we try to engage them with a poster or a postcard, or we try to, you know, spark interest in that way, it doesn't work because they're already cluttered with a bunch of stuff. But I think another clutter in the lives of college students is found in what they place as the highest value and meaning in. They fill their lives with so much stuff that can't support them eternally, right? We turn to alcohol or experiences or sports, right? Maybe one of the students we've been trying to reach, he's so obsessed with sports that he gives his life to camping out for tickets, and I've done it. But it's hard for them because that's the thing they worship, right? So it's hard to get engage them with the gospel. Or a third kind of clutter that I see is just the nature of living in what I would think is a very over-connected world that we live in today. And we're over-connected and I think very under-reflective. We're always in front of a screen. You know, I can be in front of a screen almost 24/7 between my phone and my computer and when I work. And it's hard to engage somebody in conversation about something serious just because we're so connected. So what does this mean for the church? How do we break through the clutter? And what I wanted to do is just look at Jesus and see some of the ways he cleared through clutter and he reached people with creativity and skill. I think in Jesus we have an example of someone who faced very lives of people who were also cluttered like the lives of people we faced, but he was caring, loving, but also creative and skillful in how he reached them. So for those of you, I mean, I think we all have read the Gospels to a certain extent. If you were to identify some of the clutter that maybe first century Jews had when Jesus was on planet, what do you think some of the clutter was in their lives that Jesus had to sift through?
The religious establishment.
In what ways?
Well, just like legalistically with all the sacrifices and offerings and things like that.
So all the rules that...
Right.
The Levitical laws that maybe kind of clouded God. Mm-hmm.
Probably also a lot of other false prophets that claim to teach their own truth, maybe claim to be the Messiah.
Mm-hmm. Other prophets who said, hey, we've got the right path, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they wanted this Messiah to be the conquering king who came in on his white horse and swept them off their feet to victory, right? Mm-hmm. What else? Any other thoughts?
Government at times.
Roman rule probably had some say in, yeah. Yeah, so if you had leprosy you weren't necessarily a tax collector, you weren't necessarily as considered welcome in everyday society. Yeah. And so what I'm impressed with Jesus is he says in Matthew 10, as he's sending out his disciples, he says, I'm sending you out like sheep among wolves, therefore be wise as serpents and as harmless as doves. He says, I'm sending you out like sheep among wolves. So what's interesting is Jesus knew that reaching people would be hard, right? If you're sending sheep out in wolves, that doesn't connotate it's going to be easy, right, to talk to people or engage people with the message. But then he also says that we need to be like wise as serpents and as harmless as doves. And so I think Jesus is saying that we need to be as strategic and thoughtful as much as we need to be caring and loving. I think sometimes as Christians we just say, oh, you just got to love people. Well, yeah, But I think there's also, to a large degree, that we have to be strategic and creative. He seems to be saying that we need to think about who we are trying to reach before we try to do evangelism. Jesus was attractive to prostitutes and tax collectors, to people who were disregarded as holy, who disregarded holiness. But they were most attracted to Jesus, who was probably the most holy. Why is that? And the only conclusion I can come up to is that in addition to being the most holy, Jesus was also the most loving, most joyful, and possibly the most fun person to be around. Jesus wasn't a stiff, joyless, somber person. He was brimming and overflowing with life. And he wanted others to experience the life that he had. And so, as I was thinking about, well, what are some of the ways that he took this life to people? What were some of the creative, skillful ways that Jesus engaged people? And I think there are four that I see that stand out to me. I think that's what I have. Yeah. And the first one is, one way I see it is in the questions he asks. Questions are a huge tool engaging people with the message. Matthew 20, there's two blind men who yell at Jesus, right? And Jesus, what does he say? He says, well, what do you want me to do for you? And they had to respond to this question. For most people, a lot of times, they probably just asked for money, like the people we see on the street, right? But they knew who Jesus was, and they asked for something a little bit harder. Hey, we want to see, right? Or in Matthew 16, he's with his disciples, and Jesus says, who do people say that the Son of Man is? Who do you say that I am? And the disciples say, well, some say that you're John the Baptist, or Elijah, or Jeremiah, or the prophets. So he's trying to really engage with them. Who am I? You know, trying to get at where their belief is. Then he says to a group, says, who did you go out into the desert to see? This is in Matthew 11. And he's talking about John the Baptist. This is kind of the follow-up part of the story from what Neil talked about yesterday. Or Matthew 16, what can a man give in exchange for his soul? This is comes after Peter, you know, Jesus says, hey, I'm going to be killed and crucified. And Peter says, no, you won't. And Jesus says, what can man give in exchange for his soul? It has to be a sacrifice. So he confronts their thinking. He doesn't attack it, but he uses a question to confront them, to challenge them. Good questions engage people to access life in a new, with new and fresh perspective, or to see where they're at, right? To gauge where they're at. With a question, he can figure out from the disciples, you know, who am I? Who do people say that I am? Do you align yourself with them, or maybe you guys see me differently? So questions are very powerful. Second, Jesus uses stories, and to me, this is the one I love the most. To me, stories are genius. To use parables is to be creative and sensitive to an audience. So many of you probably, you guys know who Brother Jed is? He might have been on your campus. He's at Mizzou all the time. And in a sense, he's a storyteller, right? He's trying to tell the story of Jesus, right? And he does it by calling down, you know, hellfire and damnation on the drunks and the fornicators. But the problem with this approach to storytelling is what? What happens when he does this? People get what? Angry, defensive, right? They fight back. Their intentions are, because he's coming with his fists out, what do? They get their fists out and they want to fight back, right? That's why you see the group that's, you know, kind of circle around him and kind of just jab back at him, right? Yell stuff back at him. So because I think his intentions are good, but because he comes with his fists out, people want to fight back. And so I think it's hard to be effective in this way, because people get defensive and they shut down. But when Jesus used stories, when he told parables, what happened? He's being a little sly. He's getting behind the defenses. There's a phrase that Emily Dickinson uses in a poem that's called Tell It in Slant. And her thought is, so often we get messages in our lives that are coming straight at us. straight at us, you know. And you know, if I came to you and just said, you know, what do you think about God, and I'm just so direct, you know, you might not be as responsive. But if you tell a story, it comes from on slant, it comes from an angle different than what they're expecting. All of a sudden, when you tell a story, when you use a parable, you find yourself involved, right? When he tells the parable of the lost son, what happens? You know, am I the younger son? Am I the older son? You find yourself involved, right? My dad is a big storyteller. And good storytellers draw you in, right? You could have heard the story 30 times, and you still want to listen to the story, right? My friend, my college roommate Drew, is the same way. Every time he tells a story, it's a little bit different. And what's funny about Jesus is, as the end of his life is coming, and there's not much time left, he tells stories even more. Which to me is a little weird. Because wouldn't you think, okay, if the end of your life is approaching and you want people to, you know, follow this way of life and follow you, you're going to be pretty direct with them. I mean, the stakes are high, and you just want to tell them it as it is. But no, he becomes more relaxed and almost more conversational with people. Instead of high decibel words, he calls for decisions. Instead of high decibel words calling for decisions before it's too late, he hardly, if at all, even mentions the name of God. Instead, he tells parables. And these parables are his way of getting around their defenses to get them to experience the life that is life. I think what the use of parables and stories also shows is the third tool that he uses, and that's he speaks their language. It's not the language of religious elite, but it's the everyday common language. You know, we have to learn the language of unbelievers. And I think that's what Jesus did. He didn't talk in religious terms. He tells stories, what, about farmers, judges, about victims, about coins, about sheep and prodigal sons, about wedding banquets, building barns and towers, and going to war, a friend who wakes you up in the middle of the night to ask for a loaf of bread, the courtesies of hospitality, crooks and beggars, fig trees and manure. I mean, that was their world. That was their everyday life. And he uses and speaks their language. And finally, he catches people off guard. He breaks through with people not only with stories and surprise, but with surprise. There is power in surprise. When you surprise people, you get around their first filter that most often keeps stories out of them. I think when Jesus told these parables, the way some of these stories ended were surprising, like the Good Samaritan. The fact that the hero is a Samaritan is surprising. It's shocking. But I think the caution is, you know, it wasn't shock. He wasn't trying to be shocking. He's trying to be surprising. Shocks burn out. We live in a pop culture. We see it all the time. The people who try to be shocking, they burn out pretty fast, right? But a surprise that's real shows that life change comes through a surprise, not a shock. So as I've been thinking and looking at Jesus' life and reading the Gospels, I've noticed these things. And I've been thinking, okay, so what can Jesus teach me and teach us as we try to reach campus? How can we be not only loving and caring, but also skillful and creative? And as I've been thinking about it, I think that reaching campus students starts with moments that we spark students in amid the clutter. When we bring life to campus. So many of you have bumped into things that have probably caught you by surprise and made you feel alive. I grew up in Illinois, Northwest Illinois. And a few years ago, I went to the Lincoln Presidential Museum in Springfield, Illinois. It's a new museum. And, you know, everyone's been to a museum. And usually they're pretty boring, you know. It's like something's on the wall, like a picture. And it's got like that little plaque that describes it. And then you walk to the next thing. And it's another thing that's just sitting there, and there's a plaque, right? Well, what's cool about the Lincoln Presidential Museum is that it's just not one of those walk-through museums where you stare at information. It has elements that really engage you, that kind of stir something up. There's this 3D hologram thing that's just like crazy, and it's hard to even like describe. Like, and he's telling the story about Lincoln, and there's just all these different things that are just kind of like life-generating. They're just fun. It pulls you into the history. It pulls you into participation. And it's fun to bump into something like that. You know, as I said, I'm not an evangelism, but I still desire to stir something up in young people on campus to help them know God. And one of the ways that I found that I can make this happen is in much the same way, like I went to this museum and bumped into something that seemed alive and real, is having moments like that on campus where we engage students with what I call spark moments. So oftentimes when we think about doing evangelism on campus, and maybe if you've been to an LT, what is it you do? You go in pairs maybe and you try to talk to people in Boulder or Virginia Beach, on the beach, or wherever. Campus, sometimes it's a little harder to do that, or maybe you have done it. And I think there are times for that to work. But for me, what I love about spark moments, and I'll get more into what I think these can do to help us in evangelism as we kind of continue to go on, but is that what these do is they're like bumping into things that brim with life. Instead of having a bunch of postcards that maybe we're trying to pass out, what a spark moment is we ask one question that we want people to really chew on and think about. It's a thought-provoking question. It's a personal question. And like Jesus, it's a question that gets them to think, that maybe engages them with a little bit of life. So let me describe what I think spark moments consist of, okay? The first thing that spark moments consist of is sparking curiosity. It starts with a good question or creative idea. So here's a couple that we've done at The Rock. The first one is we did this. This was this fall. I had this Polaroid camera, and we were on what's called Lowry Mall. It's not our quad, but it's a kind of hub of students on campus on like a Thursday or Friday at 10 o'clock in the morning to about 4 in the afternoon. And I had this camera, and we had a large pegboard that was, you know, it was big. And I had 200 film pictures to take. And what we did is I was there. We had a big sign that said, "What makes you uncommon?" And people just walk by. I mean, I got 200 photos here of people. And people wrote what makes them uncommon, from a Jew fro to this girl that wrote, "I'm bisexual and proud," to "I enjoy talking in accents." We took their picture and asked them to write their response on it. And what was crazy is, like, at first, you know, we had like 4 photos, 5 photos, 6 photos. But pretty soon it was generating a buzz, and people were like bringing their friends to come look. Hey, look. And people were reading them. It was awesome. The one we've done before that is we had a big board, and we said, what word describes your story? And people got a piece of paper and they wrote like one word. Some people said like hurting, lost, or fun, or parties, or beer. A third one that we've done is, who has marked your life? And we had a 6-foot cutout of a person in wood, and we had all these markers right here. We had a couple hundred markers, and we just gave people a marker and said, go write someone's name up there who's marked your life. And so they grabbed the marker and they wrote that name on there, and they walked. I said, keep the marker. And we had all these names of people up there. And what was crazy is, this is a fun story. This woman, someone's name got written up there, and this teacher came walking by. She was looking at it. She goes, that's my name. Someone had wrote her name on the board. That was pretty cool. We had a big world once. This isn't it, but I thought, what I wanted to do is to have like a bunch of these, all, like 6 different places on campus, and ask people to write, how do you want to change the world? And so what we did instead is we had a big board of the world, and people wrote how they wanted to change the world on it. But I mean, wouldn't it have been fun if like 6 different spots on campus we had one of these and people wrote how you want to change the world on it? In my mind, I think questions might be one of the best tools in an evangelist's belt. Because again, they get people to start thinking. The wheels start spinning, right? But here's the second thing I like about these spark moments. Is they not only do they spark curiosity in people, they spark conversations. You know, we do the table for 4 hours. It's a table, I don't really have a better word. You know, we have a table there for markers and stuff. And we interact with hundreds of students. What's more important to me than the responses is the conversations we have with people. Blogger and author Seth Godin says this. He says, the conversation you create is worth more than the product you make. And I think it's true, even in our evangelism. We found this to be true. We ask, you know, people start asking, you know, what we do is someone writes, you know, this guy wrote number one. And I was like, what do you mean? I mean, why'd you write that? What's that mean? And just engaged him in a short little conversation. And it's interesting. You know, I don't think I've knowingly bumped into too many people who would say they're bisexual in public. But because she wrote that, and I asked her, because she walked, I had taken her picture, she had put it on the board, she had come back later to look at it, and I said, are you up there? And she goes, yeah, and she pointed at hers. And I engaged this girl who I usually, you know, don't engage with people like that in my life, and we had a little bit of a conversation about it. And what's crazy is they volunteer things that you wouldn't expect in a normal conversation. It's weird. They're weirdly vulnerable when we do these things. And I got to have a dialogue with her. And a lot of what we encourage, if we have 3 or 4 of us there, hey, just talk to people. So like if I'm taking pictures and they're the ones helping people hang on the board, hey, why'd you write that? Or what'd you think about that? And it's fun. We also, when we do it, we notice that people are intrigued and attracted. It generates a small buzz. They ask, why are you doing this? What's the point? And I think what they expect is that there to be a catch, you know, kind of like that bait and switch that sometimes Christians can be good at. But there is no bait and switch. We're not out there giving tracts or handing out postcards. Our goal is to really just start these conversations with people. And even listening to them have conversations with the friends, if they're in a group, is awesome. Because what I like is that it kind of stirs something in people. And I think what I think it even does in me is it kind of eases me of this burden to like evangelize and like have to like get directly to the gospel every time, right? I think sometimes when we go person to person in pairs, we can think, okay, now I have to do it right now. I think, but what it does is it helps me to know, hey, this is a human being. They probably haven't had a conversation maybe with someone about some of this stuff in a while. And I find that in me, the uneasiness and the pressure begins to ease because, no, I'm just having conversations. We're just trying to spark something. We're not trying to get, you know, to the end. We're just at the beginning stages. We're just trying to create a little spark. And so I'm even curious, you know, for a lot of you guys, I took your picture and asked you to write something, like, why did you write what you did? I'm just curious for some of you. Yeah?
I've never met someone else that has the same thing that I wrote.
What'd you write?
I have more taste buds than 75%.
You have more taste buds? You know this for sure?
Yes, it's called being a super taster. And I've never actually met someone else that is or that knows that they are. Someone here probably is, but... Yeah, so I always put that up there to see if I was like, oh my gosh, me too, and no one else's. And so I haven't had that yet, but it's going to happen.
So like you can taste that like I can't taste?
Well, not necessarily that, they're just more intense. So like spicy foods for me are like super, super hot, so I can't really eat them. And then like things that I like are really, really good, and things that I like are absolutely horrendous.
Huh.
So, or things I don't like.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thoughtful because I was like trying to think, okay, what am I going to write? Like, well, I bet things, but statistically, there's probably other people, so it's not necessarily my So, well, there's also this, and I'm really like, blah, 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 and like, I'm just thinking and thinking, like, well, you can think a lot.
You're a thinker, yeah.
The thing that I like to do the most is a lot of times everyone else's worst fear. I love public speaking and other people hate it.
Yeah. comes easy for you.
No, I don't know about that.
You don't mind getting up in front of people.
Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah. What's a voice you can do?
Donald Duck.
Donald Duck. You want to do a Donald Duck for us or not?
And like, they're just really weird voices.
Do you want to do Donald Duck or not?
Sure.
Yeah. Nice. Was it a hard question for you, for somebody?
I still haven't come up with mine.
You still haven't come up with yours. We've been in here for 35 minutes and you still don't have one? A little bit of pressure from.
Maybe I should write very thoughtful.
Very, very thoughtful for you.
It was kind of hard for me because I hate this kind of question. They're very vague.
Sure.
It's kind of, I don't know. And yeah, what makes you uncommon? I guess for me, it's just kind of hard. I ended up putting down that I've lived in the same house my entire life, which I don't know how uncommon that is, but it seems to be quite uncommon.
Yeah. But it, being put on the spot with a question sometimes is hard for some people. Yeah, I can relate to that. Mm-hmm. You want the right answer or a good answer?
Yeah.
I was amazed when we did it how many people said, I'm not. I'm just uncommon. I'm just common. I was kind of like, huh. I would just be like, surely not. Yeah.
When you did this, did you have a lot of people that, like, wouldn't go up to the table or whatever or do the picture thing because, like, there were people there? You know what I mean? Like, did the people that would ask them the questions intimidate them? Like, did you get that feeling at all?
You know, I tried to be, I think some, you know, and you just kind of let some of those people go, yeah. You know, because you don't want to pressure someone into
right.
it. But, I just try to be, like, I'm not trying to be like, I'm not real brash. So when I confront somebody, I'm not just like loud and obnoxious. I'm more like, hey, we're just taking pictures and asking people like what makes them uncommon. Do you have like a second? Can I take your picture? You know, if I'm just kind of fun and lighthearted, I think for some people, it's if I can be inviting, that helps. And it's not like we have four people with cameras all over the place. No, it's just me. And so I think if it wasn't as intense.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can see maybe if they're more introverted and not quite as, like,
yeah.
Maybe we get more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did something at my school with, like, crew that did something similar, except they just wrote on a board,
mm-hmm.
and they wouldn't do it if there were people standing around.
Right.
Which, I don't know.
Yeah.
And what did you do when people asked you why you were doing it?
Hey, we're just trying to just engage people in conversation. If people really press it, hey, we're just part of a church on campus, just trying to talk with people. But yeah, I mean, for me, I just really want that connection. And even what's cool is, like, as you guys were sharing, what happens? Like, you're talking about your taste buds, and you're talking about living in, you know, the same house. Like, part of your story is coming out, right? Your unique, created individuality of a creation of God is coming out. And what I think even is good about it is even if I don't necessarily get to tell them about God, I think what it even does for someone is affirms the life and the creation of who they are in God's eyes, right? And if a really good connection is made, maybe you got to be risky enough to say, hey, I've enjoyed our conversation. I know this might be weird, but can we get coffee or something? And then you can maybe talk about it further. But for me, it's just... my goal is to spark just a little something. And I think that's what these do. So it's sparking curiosity, sparking conversations. I think a third thing it does is it can spark change. Not only do we want conversations to happen, but doing these tables in creative ways is a form of art, I think, that generates a buzz and engages with people. I think of it almost as like evangelistic art, in a sense. You know, we are the artists who are willing to kind of stand up and kind of stand out a little bit. According to the masters of screenwriting, one of the tenets of a great film is an inciting incident that occurs early in the plot. It presents a problem that people that propels the main character towards forward and sustains your interest as a viewer? So maybe what's an exciting incident from a film that you would think?
The Sorcerer's Stone is stolen.
The stone is stolen. Forrest Gump, do you know that? Is it when his mom dies, or?
Ron, Forrest, Ron, and he's running.
Yeah. Do you guys know what your inciting incident maybe was? For me, it was when two guys from The Rock, who were juniors, who lived in the dorms, came to my dorm as a freshman, 6 hours away from home, and said, "Hey, do you want to come eat dinner with us?" And then they came the next day, and they called me the next day. And a freshman who was looking for friends had someone who wanted to be friends with. And they lived out this real Christianity. That was an exciting incident in my life. And what if maybe for somebody, one of these little moments is a inciting incident? Can we create inciting incidents with these spark moments on campus? As The Rock has been doing these creative experiments for the past year or so, we've really seen it stir up people. You know, often people walk by and they're busy and they say, "Ah, no, man," or, I have my earbuds in and I can't hear you, or I'm making eye contact with you, but I'm still got my earbuds in and I can't really stop. But the goal isn't to pull everyone in. My hope is that maybe even if we ask the question and someone walks on by, like, maybe there's some residue that gets left. And they go to class and they're sitting in their stat lecture, bored out of their mind, and they're thinking, "What does make me uncommon? What was that about?" Maybe something is kind of lingers. Or maybe for those that participate, it's a great... For me, I like that it gets the wheels spinning. And for some people, their day gets messed up, you know? Like, it's easy on campus to just have your routine, right? You go the same path at campus every day, and all of a sudden, one day, like, you're on your path, and someone asks you a question and pulls you into participation with this thing, and your day got messed up, right? For 2 or 3 minutes... You got out of the mundane routine and you got to engage with maybe something that affirmed you or gave you life or challenged you. It's not propaganda. It's just an act of trying to bring life and affirmation, I think, to campus. This is what Seth Godin says again. He says, "Marketing is traditionally a selfish act, an act of taking time, attention, or money, and giving little in return. Marketing was corrupted by TV, which allowed anyone with a few bucks to generate a few more bucks. Not just soap or cars, but TV preachers too. Yell, lie, entertain, and repeat. The push mindset is fading slowly. The market has realized it is far sooner than the marketers have. Marketing is now transparent storytelling, collaboration, and yes, art. Stop telling me what I must do and start leading me somewhere I want to go." I just like to think about that. Start leading me somewhere where I want to go. And even, I think, getting people to think about these questions is one way of doing that. And I think my fourth hope, and just if my campus did this more frequently and you guys got something like this stirred up on your campus, is I think if we did this consistently, maybe it could create a little bit of a spark on campus. I think traditional methods of reaching students sometimes have a difficulty cutting through clutter. And sometimes if we do experimental advertising, like throwing up a bunch of posters or postcards, is annoying, right? But I think doing something creative that creates positive relationships with the community, it can leave a lasting impression. And it's far more effective than just trying to advertise. And what I like about these times, too, is that I think it gives Christians some renewed energy. I know for me, when I've done this with some of our other staff and students on campus, is they have a lot of fun doing it. I don't think they're worried about trying to have to evangelize or share the gospel. They're just lively, you know, asking people, "Why'd you write that?" We're bold, and I think in a sense it sparks me to be more sensitive. So I don't necessarily mean like we should quit advertising or hanging up posters, I think it still has a purpose. But I think what our churches are good at is relationships, right? And so if that's what we're good at, and I think that's what these tables are something that do that. And so my dream is, what if campuses around the country had spark moments on a regular basis? So if I was to summarize the idea, it's this. Spark moments are creative, skillful experiments on campus that get around people's defenses and engage them with a thought-provoking question that could spark conversations and possibly spark the campus. Really, for me, this kind of just, all great dreams start with a problem. Martin Luther King saw the problem of racism. Steve Jobs saw the problem of crappy computers. And for me, and part of it is, I've just seen the problem of what it looks like to reach campus. It's hard. And so what oftentimes the great dreamers, great thinkers are trying to solve a problem. And I think we all want to reach campus. And so what I wanted to do here a little bit towards the end is just have you guys maybe help brainstorm ideas. Maybe these are even ideas that you can take back to campus. Do you guys have a thought? Yeah.
The college church could connect and work with the local church that isn't necessarily a college church, but it's a church that's been in the town already for 25 or 30 years.
Doing something like this?
Evangelizing. I know a college church could work with the senior high youth group of a church, which a lot of people, at least in Bloomington Normal, a lot of the students from my youth group are going to end up going to ISU or Harvard.
Sure.
In the town. So why not
partner?
Start bringing them in.
Sure.
Now?
Yeah.
So the first day they show up, they have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, totally. But I'm even thinking the question in terms of helping think of ideas, of questions that maybe could help spark some of these conversations on campus. So like I said, we've done What Makes You Uncommon. One of the ones I want to do this next spring is have a mirror on campus and have it say, "What do you see?" and see what people would write. Yeah. What do you want people to know about you? Do you have a creative way that you could do that, you think? Don't know.
You could maybe, put your name on a sheet of paper and then let people come around later in the day and write whatever they want about you. It depends on how big of a school you go to.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is love?
Just have a big heart and have people.
I just went through a project where they went around and asked what is God, and someone asked what is love, and they wrote down their responses, and then you could read them and guess who was talking about God and who was talking about love, because some people they asked were atheists and were talking about love instead. And it was really interesting to see the similarities that people were saying, even if they didn't actually believe in God.
Yeah.
That's
cool. I want to get back to you. Yeah.
What do you fear? What scares you? It's a little more dark, but just so kind of...
Yeah, I actually kind of wanted to do that around Halloween once, but I never kind of... Yeah.
You could have a map and a bunch of push pins and have a question at the top that says, "Where do you consider home?" And have yarn and trace it to the places that people consider to be their home.
Yeah.
Be a house or
anything. Okay. How do you want to be remembered? That's cool. Yeah, I thought about maybe even getting a big map of campus, somehow make a big map, and have make a footprint of what's your legacy, what kind of mark will you have left on campus, maybe. There's a one I've seen someone done, before I die, dot, dot, dot. It was a big board, and people came and wrote stuff on that. Any other thoughts? Ideas? Where are you going? So my hope, this is kind of a, I think stuff like this really engages college students. You know, people do those weird flash mobs, right? It's like stuff like this on campus is something college students engage with, or even like the, do people play humans versus zombies on your campus? Like, they like these those participatory things. I just think we're kind of a very experiential generation, right? And there's something about these things that people are interacting, it's tangible. My hope is to keep this conversation going. What I did is I started a little blog called sparkcampus.wordpress.com. And my hope is, as I keep doing these and we keep taking pictures, is to talk about how we did the idea on campus so that you guys maybe can try something on campus. Or maybe you guys do one and you need to just post a comment and then send me pictures and then I'll post it on there. But to me, I just think, what if like we had a movement of these things happening throughout GCM? And I just think it would give us kind of some of that. It even sparks us as evangelists on campus. So that's just sparkcampus.wordpress.com. So yeah. See if you can get a spark going. Maybe you just need to do one next semester. I mean, John Drage and I have been talking about doing 3 or 4 and trying to do it on a consistent basis, building a sense of familiarity with maybe some people on campus. And I think one of the things I don't mind is sharing ideas, borrowing ideas, recycling ideas. I think that's what we have to do. I don't think we need to apologize for being recycling agents. I think if you have a great idea that has been helping touch campus, then I want to try to use it too. So I wanted to close by just telling you a little story. And I'll take some questions. But because there's so much clutter on our campuses, as I said, we want to engage people with life that is life. And what that looks like, what does that look like? Have you guys read the book Bridge to Terabithia or know the story a little bit? Okay, I'm weird. I read a lot of books and I like young adult literature, okay? I'm not necessarily a Harry Potter, Aragon type fan, but no, I read a lot of the books like Bridge to Terabithia, Shiloh, a lot of those books that you would have read when you were in like fourth grade. So, Bridge to Terabithia has this character, Jess Ahrens, and he had this ambition, and it was to be the fastest runner in fifth grade. And he had been working and practicing all summer and couldn't wait to see his classmates' faces when he beat them all, right? So on the first day of school, they have this race out on the lawn during recess. And he's so excited. But on the first day, there's a new kid, and it's a new girl. And she boldly crosses over to the boys' side for the race, lines up, and then she proceeds to outrun everybody, even Jess Ahrens. And this was not a very promising start for a new friendship, but Jess and Leslie Burke become inseparable. It doesn't matter to Jess that Leslie dresses funny or that her family has a lot of money, but no TV. Leslie has imagination, and together she and Jess create Jess and Leslie create Terabithia, a magical kingdom in the woods where the two of them reign as king and queen and their imaginations run wild. But then one morning a tragedy occurs. I'm probably giving a little bit of the book away, but you have to do that sometimes. And only when Jess is able to come to grips with this tragedy does he finally understand what Leslie has given him. And I want you to listen to what Jess says. He thought about it all day, how before Leslie came, he had been a nothing. A stupid, weird little kid who drew funny pictures and chased around in a cow field trying to act big. Trying to find a whole mob, trying to hide a whole mob of foolish little fears running riot inside his gut. It was Leslie who had taken him from the cow pasture into Terabithia and turned him into a king. He had thought that was it. Wasn't king the best you could be? Now it occurred to him that perhaps Terabithia was like a castle where you came to be knighted. After you stayed for a while and grew strong, you had to move on. For hadn't Leslie, even in Terabithia, tried to push back the walls of his mind and make him see beyond the shining world, huge and terrible and beautiful and very fragile? I think what I think I want to do on campus is be like Leslie was for Jess and help him push back the walls. Help him. Help him push aside those little fears running riot inside of his gut. Help affirm them. Isn't this what we need to do for the campus? Help shake them out of the clutter and show them the fullness of life. Will you and I be like Leslie and help spark the lives of others? So that's that. You guys have some questions here in the last few minutes or thoughts? Yeah.
So when you do this, your goal is not to be like, hey, why did you write that? Oh, that's cool. So there's a guy named Jesus. He's really great.
No.
Like, you guys,
no.
Most of the time, don't even
no.
get to that.
No. Yeah.
Like, where do you do it on campus? I know at our campus, there's like one spot where everybody's, pushing their messages.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
like when we did this one, we were where they had a bunch of. It wasn't because we planned it this way; it just happened. Like we just went to Lowry Mall, and they had a bunch of other booths for other student groups there, which I'm okay with that because ours is still like different because like everyone else is sitting behind a table with a jar of candy and a postcard. I mean, there's 300 of those, but we're doing something that's just really being a little bit more thoughtful and engaging, and we don't have a big sign that says The Rock with us. My goal is to not have any of our marketing materials there. And it's not because I don't think we're trying to be sneaky. It's just we're just trying to be real and just engage them in conversation. Yeah.
Do you restrict it to certain times of the year?
I think it can happen any time of the year. We do it early in the fall in part because our hope is that there's more freshmen and they're more, early in the semester sometimes. Because if someone really says, okay, really, why are you doing this? And we say, hey, we're part of a church. Well, what church are you part of? You could, in the fall, they're still making their decisions. We'll do it in the spring too, but I think the fall is probably the better time of the year to do it because people really, if they're freshmen especially, haven't, kind of really landed yet. And they're still I think they're still looking and searching. And it's cold in the winter in Missouri sometimes, so we don't really do it in the winter. And I think sometimes if it meshes well with one of our series, that works too. So we had a globe even at campus the day after we did the globe one on campus. Yeah.
So in a sense, this sort of bark thing is just to start passion happening for something in order to perhaps if you do present the gospel some other time in their life, that it's continued somehow?
I think for me, a huge process in evangelism is sowing.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cultivating soil.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we just like to go in and pound the seed into the soil and hope that something
right.
pops out. But no, something has to be cultivated sometimes in people's
right.
lives. So for me, it's one part of cultivating. It's we get to affirm them as God's creation, right? Maybe something, it seems weird that we're not necessarily we don't always see the end result.
Right.
But I think it does something inside of me, and who knows, maybe they do come to one of our services because they asked and we told them that we're a church, or part of it's just me being bold and saying, hey, can I grab coffee? That's part of it too. Yeah, but it is weird because it does feel like you're doing something, but what's the? There's not a tangible maybe result. And that kind of can seem kind of weird. I know. But I don't know. I'm of the mindset that not everything we do has to always have that. Like,
yeah.
Christians always want, like, well, what, you know, where we want this, like, if I'm doing this, what's the result? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we do it and it just, I don't know. We do a question and it flops. That might happen too. But it's just fun. I just like to try stuff that's different.
Okay.
It's more fun for me, at least.
Right. Part of the reason I ask is because, like, I was thinking about, like, pitching this, like, someone in our church to just, like, get the okay to do it, right? And I'm like,
yeah.
Well, like, what if they're like, what's the point?
Yeah.
Like, what am I going to say to them?
So. Yeah. And that's what the students ask us all the time. What's the point? Mm-hmm. I'm like, there really isn't one. I mean, I just want to engage you in conversation. Like, you're a human being, right?
Like, people might mention to their friends later, like, oh, like, this was on campus today, and maybe another friend knows about it, and it's like, oh, yeah, it's a church group. And if you have, like, the experience where you talk to somebody who's a Christian when you're not, and they don't, like, push their beliefs on you, that can make a really big impression, too.
Yeah, and I think it's good for people to see the church not just, like, trying to, like, get something from you. We're not taking surveys of people. Like, if we make a good connection with someone, okay, like, what's your phone number? But, like, we don't have surveys. We don't, I think so many people have been kind of burned by the bait and switch before. Well, cool. That's it, guys.